Welcome to Free Fire Radio. And now, Free Fire Radio is about to commence.
Good morning, North State, and welcome to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott, and we're back, and we're glad to be back. It's 7:06 in the morning. It's June 25th, and we're getting ready to start the weekend out. I hope you're having a great morning. We are. And we've got some we got some great guests on for today, that's for sure. You know, I'm joined today, though, and we missed him, a Bad Bob.
And welcome back, and how was Sacramento?
It was... It was really good. It was an honor to meet some of these, you know, World War II, Korean War, Buffalo Soldiers types. That was it was quite an honor to meet them.
And did you get a nice plaque?
Well, it was more of a resolution type thing. So it was a it was one of those things you hang on the wall. So, but it was nice, and it was.
Beautiful plaque.
We deeply appreciate it.
We'll have pictures.
So many
put pictures on the website.
So many more of our veterans out here that surely deserve that honor too. Okay, I'm quite surprised you're not wearing a grotesquely objectable T-shirt this morning.
We're shopping for them.
Okay, that's good. Anyway, but I'm joined especially though by my love, Linda.
Well, good morning. It's great to be back in the co-host seat. Bob, it looks like a vintage. It looks like a vintage kind of 60s, but a kind of flamboyant
gesture.
Golden black or beige and black. And yes, congratulations are in order, and it was a wonderful event for those of you who have many thank you notes and many emails for Carl, and thank you so much for that. It was a very wonderful event. And on top of that, it was fun. My parents came, and we were able to take a personal tour of the Capitol, and there were all kinds of wonderful little nooks and crannies and unusual things that we would not have known or have probably have seen in a major tour, or maybe they do. But it was great, and just to be able to touch history like that. Currently 63 degrees. It's going to be a hot one today, a high of 93. And, Bob, you mentioned something about hot weather, cold water.
We're looking to hit the century mark by this weekend, possibly 104, 106 by Sunday. But on top of that, we've got a lot of snow melt entering our rivers and lakes, which means the water is quite cold. So if you're out there, you get way overheated, you jump in that cold water, it can stop your clock, especially if you have some health issues. So please be very careful and make sure the little ones are wearing their life jackets, and just use a little common sense and avoid some tragedy.
Well, thanks. And then also while we were in Sacramento, before we came back into town, I had to stop and do an errand. And Carl and I we walked into the mall there on Arden Way. There's an item that I can only get there at a specific store. And we were, what are all these people on the second floor? What are all these people? Are they doing like an audition or filming a movie?
700, 800 people in line.
No, we are going to disagree on that. I'm telling you, there had to be over 1,000 people.
Okay, it could be.
And this is at 9:50 in the morning.
And they were quiet, and they had books, and they were reading.
Standing in line for the iPhone.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
And some of them, they said, well, we're in the gray zone. We may not be able to get one. And I went, and then people were lining up behind them. I thought, you're lining up for a phone?
They were lining up. If you've ever been to the Sacramento Mall, they were lining up. Through lining up in single file all the way down to Macy's, all the way down to Sears. So
around they had them going in circles.
Right.
There's that many of them for the iPhone.
For the phone, yeah. And evidently, I guess there were. I don't know. There was an article today about in Seattle, out of Seattle, that they were rushing to just for 600,000 phones in that particular area for pre-order. So we just wow. And then we talked to a guy and said, are they really that great? He's, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's worth waiting in line for. okay.
Went to the days when you could just pick up a phone that you had on your hip and make a phone call. I think that was really a great invention. And we got to take a break here. We've got some great guests lined up today. We're going to be talking to Heroes of X Games. We've got, I believe, Ron Largent calling for a few minutes. And then we also have Colonel Tim Garrity will be here at 7:30, and we're going to be talking with him for the remainder of the show. He's got a lot of great things to say. Not only about his book that he wrote about what truly happened in Beirut in 1983, it's called Peacekeepers at War, but he's going to be discussing other events that have happened around our country and other countries close to us that could have an effect on us. Carl and Linda Bott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio. Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott. Time is 7:14. Let's go to the phones. Hey, Ron Largent. Good morning, Ron.
Hi, Carl. I'm going to be covering Kurt's radio show tomorrow morning.
Okay.
And we're going to have I'm going to have a little different format, and I want your listeners to be informed of what we'll be doing. First of all, I'm going to have a guest in, and we're going to talk about financing, home mortgages. It's going to be like Finance 101. Any basic questions are going to be addressed. You know, with my show, there won't be any dumb questions. Every question is a good question. And I'm encouraging people to call in. We're going to talk about the cost of getting a loan. We're going to talk about limitations now. There's a lot of talk out there right now. In fact, it was on the news this morning. We are at the lowest interest rate we've been since the 50s. And we're going to cover all of this. So my guest will be Daryl Miller, who is with Prospect Mortgage. Daryl's been around a long time. He knows the market very well. I just wanted to encourage your listeners to, if they have any questions about home financing, tomorrow will be their chance.
Hey, Ron, we know Daryl, and we think he's a fine gentleman. And so tell us tomorrow, again, our listeners, when to tune in.
Well, he'll come on at 8:15. The show starts at 8 o'clock, and I'm going to give a little kind of an update on where we are in terms of the real estate market, not only in Redding, but throughout the state of California. I just got back from a meeting in Atlanta and got some information about the national trends. We'll talk about that for a few moments, and then Daryl will come on about 8:15, and we're going to have him on for about 30 minutes, so there will be plenty of good time and for good questions.
Great.
Okay, that's
so,
tomorrow, 8 o'clock in the morning. Ron Largent's going to be sitting in for Kurt, and you're going to get all kinds of great information about the lowest rates for loans in the history of the last 50 years.
Good. Well, we look forward to it, and hope we have a lot of questions come in, and it should be a good show.
Yeah. Ron, thank you so much for calling in.
Okay, see you tomorrow.
Okay. You bet. Okay, our next guest, Todd Thompson. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning, Todd.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Fine. Great.
Hey,
how are you? What's going on?
Oh, just sitting here drinking some coffee. Got back, went to Mammoth yesterday and did some riding, so I'm a little tired, but we'll make it through.
Getting prepared, I understand.
Yes, ma'am. How are you?
Great.
Awesome.
So I got to hear the interview was a few days back, and we're just calling to remind people. Again, why don't we refresh our memories about this big event coming up?
Yeah, actually, it's tomorrow. We're really excited about it. We're going to be out at Finger Lakes MX Park in Red Bluff. It's a fundraiser to help me raise some money to get to X Games this year. I'm an adaptive athlete, which means I lost my lower right leg racing motorcycles, and the X Games has given me a chance and some other people, you know, around the world a chance to compete on the highest level live on ESPN July 29th. And so we're going to go down there. I qualified in Michigan last month, and we're going to go down there and try to win a gold medal.
Well, Todd, when you say that you're doing a fundraiser and that you need to raise these funds to actually get to you've already gotten to the position where you're going to compete in the X Games. How much are you looking for? What do you need?
It's not just the money that I need to get there. It's you know, to offset some of the costs that I've incurred in getting there. I'm looking for around $10,000, which would offset some of the fuel and the trip to Michigan was pretty expensive for us because we drove back there and you know, if I got, you know, if I was able to raise about $10,000, that would be that'd be fantastic. That'd
so again, tell our listeners how we can help you.
Well, you know, you got people can come to the fundraising event tomorrow. Tickets are $15 a piece for adults, $10 for children, and $40 for a family pack of four. They can in coming to the event, they can buy raffle tickets, which we're going to be raffling off awesome prizes. Wind River donated a dinner for 10 at Elements Restaurant. I've got a gun from Old West Gun and Loan that we're raffling off. I've got a ton of raffle prizes from people all over, you know, all over the community. NorCal Granite has donated a $500 bathroom vanity, which is really cool. But basically, they can either show up to the fundraiser and support that way, or on Monday, Mary's Pizza in Anderson at the outlets has stepped up to donate. They're calling it a dine and donate, and they're basically going to give 20% of their proceeds for the lunch and dinner service to my cause, which is awesome.
Well, Todd, I'll tell you what Carl and I would like to do right now. We will give you $40 for that family pack of tickets.
It's $15 a piece.
Well, then you said it was $40 for what, the family?
Yeah, it's a family of four.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Oh, we're gonna buy one of those from you, and we are going to turn around and take our first caller today so that our listeners can come and support you as well, and that's what we want to do for you on Free Fire Radio.
Awesome. That is so cool. I really, really appreciate that.
Okay, so we've got four tickets to the motocross and the fundraiser for Todd Thompson. And which the only thing you have to do is, I don't know how we're going to do this, Todd, except since it's going to be Saturday. Four aside or something.
Yeah, they can show up and all earmark four of them for them. And the cool thing about that is that, you know, that we've got the actual raffle tickets themselves, so, you know, they have a chance to win some awesome prizes when they do show up too. And it's not just, you know, there's going to be some open riding, there's going to be some motorcycle riding going on, but there's also going to be a freestyle demo with a couple guys from High Rise FMX doing some backflips on their dirt bikes.
So the first caller, 605-4567, that'll be four tickets for tomorrow's special event to support Todd Thompson. Getting out there for the X Games. It's an amazing, amazing journey that you've been on, and we are so behind you.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Well, one of the six in the world. One of six in the world. And he's one of our North Staters. And we wish you nothing but great luck, Todd.
I appreciate that. And hey, Carl, I just read that you're receiving some an assemblyman honor for your service. That's pretty cool. Both my brother-in-laws were in the service, and you know, we really appreciate what you guys do for our country.
Well, thanks. You know, it's an honor to be kind of recognized in that group of great veterans that are around here. You know, there's so many of them that deserve that award.
Well,
you know, so you just kind of try and hang in there with them. They're
yeah,
great.
Well, I'm sure it goes to the best, so I've heard nothing but good things about you, so it's pretty cool.
Well, thanks a lot, Todd. And Todd, good luck, and you know, keep in touch with us so we can let our folks know what's going on with you.
And congratulations to Randy Mitchell. Come by our station is what I'm trying to say here on Market Street, and you'll have the four. How do they do this again? Tell her. Where's Randy going to go tomorrow?
Randy's going to go. It's in Red Bluff. It's out off Highway 36, off Baker. let's see here.
I tell you what, we've got Randy's phone number.
Okay, yeah. You know what I'll do is I'll get in touch with Randy and let him know.
Okay.
And we'll do that.
All right, great. Oh, hey, Todd, thank you so much for calling in again. And, you know, and we're, like I said, stay in touch with us and call us again before you leave.
No problem. Yeah, I for surely will call, and I appreciate you guys having me on.
All right, Todd, thanks.
Thank you so much, Todd. Hey, we're going to take a quick break here. That was kind of flying by the seat of our pants.
Yeah.
Let's just get some tickets and give away. So
yeah.
we got the winner, we got their phone number, and we're going to get he and Todd together. This is Carl Lindebaugh, Free Fire Raider Radio, KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio.
Morning, Redding! Oops, just punched the microphone with my glasses.
Welcome back. 726.
Going to be high today of 93. You're listening to KCNR 1460. By the way, taking your emails, Linda at KCNR1460.com. Today, we have a very special guest. They'll be in the studio in a few minutes, as well as taking Colonel Garrity over to Tobacco and Brew today. At 12 o'clock, we have a live, also online presentation with him, where you don't want to miss this. You want to meet this man in person and his book. Excerpts from the book Carl will be talking about here in the next hour. He's just fascinating, and the story is fascinating as well. Very moving time in history. While it's interesting how sometimes when you're flipping around on the television and or you hear about these shows, and it seems like, I don't know why, it's one of those, I don't even want to call it a guilty pleasure. It's a, it's called Tots and Tiaras, the show. And recently I was reading an article in the paper about parents brawling at a kindergarten graduation. I mean, brawling, not bawling. We're talking brawling.
Yeah,
there's a big difference.
Yeah,
bawling, I understand. Brawling.
Up in Hemet or someplace. I got no fight.
Yeah.
At a kindergarten graduation. They canceled all the graduations.
Which kind of reminds me and takes me into the Tots and Tiaras, or Tiaras and Tots. And these, I don't know. I mean,
a reality show.
They're little girls. They have, like, you know, up to 3 years old. They have 3 to 6, 6 to 9. And they go through pageantry competition, and the girls who, you know, prettiest smile, pretty, you know, wonderful, you know, best talent,
most
whatever.
Photogenic.
And they get these huge crowns that are bigger than their bodies, almost. And I don't know, it just is, it's a little sicko to me.
Oh, let me say what I think it's weird. You know, there are people that compete in beauty contests. I understand that. But to see a mother just hovering over a three-year-old, and the three-year-old's got makeup on, and the way they're smiling, kids don't smile like that. That's not natural. And to see these things, so...
Well, we'd like to hear from you.
Westminster dog show.
Well, I mean, we'd like to hear from you if you have like a grandchild or a child, or you know, and they're involved in this type of, you know, pageantry.
Well, we've just said it's weird and sick.
Well, I mean, maybe they have.
Maybe they don't want to.
Well, okay, I was involved with pageants, but I was 16, 17, 18, and I think maybe you have at that age. I can only speak for myself that it was a different. It was judged on talent. It was a scholarship program. I'm not saying it was better, but I was more equipped, I think, at that age to be able to handle this type of, I guess, a competition, if you will. And these little kids, I just think to myself, okay, you're 5 years old, you win this huge crown, you have the fake eyelashes and the big hair and the perfect little gowns and all this stuff. No, I'm not kidding.
It makes sure if they've had
their who do you hang out with? I mean, where's the kid down the street that roller skates up to your door, and then you say, "Come on into my room." I mean, are these children? How do they interact? Is what I want to know.
Are these moms living vicariously?
I think so, but I mean, I just want to think about the kids. What's happening with the kids down? Or it would be nice to interview somebody at 10 or 12 who was in the pageants at 6 and 7, and how are they today? Are they well adjusted to move in and out of all kinds of society, in which really kind of happens if you go to public school?
I don't know. I don't know. It's just. I find it strange when people are 3 years old and they take their children out at age 3 and they put them in midriff showing clothes and they dance around the stage and they've got makeup on.
But I'm just being a kid.
Carl and Linda Bott. We've got to take
skipping
a break
stones.
Here when we come back. Our guest is Colonel Tim Garrity, author, warrior. Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460. Clearly, News Talk Radio.
Good morning, Reading.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. Carl and Linda Bott. It is 7:33 in the morning. Our phone lines here are 605-4567. We're streaming on KCNR1460.com.
Currently 64 degrees. Today's going to be high, sunny high with It's going to be sunny with a high near 93. I've got it. How about you? Weather's always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. And by the way, tonight we're going to be out at Anselmo's from 6 to 9 with jazz, and we'll be out there singing, so come in.
Yeah, Rick Hill and many others, and especially you singing.
Yes.
Hey, this portion of the show brought to you by B&T Satellite off Airport Road. Doug Tooley, the owner there, is a veteran, 82nd Airborne, and they've been servicing local customers since 1985. That's right, 1985. Just going down there, right down from the Burrito Bandito, and look for the place with all the satellites. He'll put in a home system for you. He'll put in the satellite systems that are second to none, and he's local. And he supports our community. And if you've got a question about anything, you just have to give Doug a call. Their phone number there is 244-1988 on Airport Road, B&T Satellite. They're our guest today, and we're honored to have Colonel Garrity back. Colonel Tim Garrity, former Marine, United States Marine Corps, retired. And the last time we had the Colonel here, there was lots of questions, and it just wasn't enough time. An hour and a half there. So we said we were going to bring him back, as we promised. And we want to discuss not only his life, but also the book he wrote, Peacekeepers at War, Beirut, 1983. The Marine Commander Tells a Story. Good morning, Colonel.
Good morning.
Well, it's good having you back here.
It's my pleasure.
Well, now you're out of Phoenix, so is this hotter or cooler than Phoenix
in
that area?
We're in the toasty season there for the next couple of months, but it's a lovely place.
Well, the Colonel also brought his lovely wife, Karen. Good morning. And we'll try and get our... There we go.
Good morning.
We're just adjusting microphones here. I know she said, please don't have us on, but, you know, good morning is fine.
That's right. Didn't mean to ambush you like
that.
So how are you liking the North State up here?
It's beautiful up here, and it's really nice to come up to the cooler weather. So we're happy to be here.
You know, can you imagine that, 93 being the cooler weather? Of course, you are up higher up and around Singletown up at Anselmo's up there, so that's nice. Anyway, thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
You know, Colonel, I guess one of the things we wanted to talk about is the main you know, the thrust of you being here, of course, is the 24th Marine Amphibious Unit and what happened when you went to Lebanon in 1983. And it was a big buildup, of course, before that. You were brought in to see, I believe, General Gray, 2nd Marine Division Commander, and asked which command you wanted, and you selected the 24th Mount.
That's correct. I was transferred down to Camp Lejeune, and for 18 months, I was what they call the G3 of the 2nd Marine Division. That's in charge of all the plans and operations and training. And so after 18 months, General Gray called me in and said it's time for command and gave me the opportunity to command the 8th Marine Regiment of the 24th Marine Amphibious Unit. And that wasn't really a choice for me. I knew right away I wanted the 24th Mile. And so I told that was my choice. And we were talking a little, and he said, well, think it over and let me know your decision in the morning. I said, no, I made my decision already. I've been in the Marine Corps long enough, and things change fast. And I wanted my choice is known. And so he smiled and told me to get back to work. And a few weeks later, I took command. And we had Marine units in Lebanon at that time as part of the peacekeeping mission, the multinational force.
So it was, and the situation there was... not a great situation either. I mean, it had not deteriorated to where it was going to be, but it was still a pretty fierce an assignment for a multinational force, and peacekeeping has its own connotation.
That's correct. And there were signs of deterioration, you know, that again, the other choice, the opposition picks that, they choose that. And we were in the middle of our workup, as we call it, before we sailed to take over the mission when the embassy was destroyed.
And that's when the bombing went into the and took out, from what I understand, some of the key figures in from the Central Intelligence Agency and that were that just happened to be there at that time. Or
yes, they were having a meeting there, and it was 63 people were killed, 17 Americans, but definitely the unit that took the hardest hit was. The Central Intelligence Agency, and good patriots. They're working over the lunch hour. Had a lot of business, and that's when the truck hit. The it killed the bombing killed not only the chief of station, but the deputy chief of station and a lot of the key operatives, intelligence officers. In Lebanon, the biggest loss was is an individual by the name of Robert Ames, who was renowned in the intelligence community and was a national intelligence officer for the Near East. And he happened to be on a visit from Langley, from the CIA headquarters. And he was... a week later, eulogized by Director of CIA William Casey as the closest thing to an irreplaceable man. It was a pretty devastating loss for the agency.
Now, do you believe that the loss of these individuals played a part in the future of what happened?
Yes, definitely. It was We know now that the decision was made earlier by Syria and Iran to use Shiite surrogates and proxies to attack. And, an attack on a U.S. embassy, that's sovereign property in foreign land. That's American property. You know, those are acts of war.
Was there any reaction to that?
Well, we did nothing. There was no retribution.
Sometimes doing nothing is a decision too, as we know.
That's right, and there were a lot of other things at that time on the mission that had to be considered. So it's not a black and white decision like any of those.
Right.
It's complex.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here, and we come back. We're going to discuss 24th Mal coming into. To Beirut, what you found there, decisions for in placing the unit at the airport, and other decisions that were being made at higher levels as we go along here the next hour. Other decisions that were being made at higher levels. And at some point today, toward the end, maybe just want to discuss General McChrystal and what happened over in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
All right, Carl on the bot, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio.
Hello.
Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio. Carl and Linda Bott. It's 7:45 in the morning. Our phone lines here are 605-4567. This portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive. We're going to be at Tobacco and Brew today. Yeah, that's right. At noontime, we're doing our town hall meeting. And our guest today will be Colonel Garrity. He's going to be down there. We have books down there. Peacekeepers at War, Beirut, 1983. The Marine commander tells his story, and he's there available. He's going to talk about what happened down there. You have a chance to ask him questions and also for him to sign some books for you. Colonel, being ordered into Lebanon, you knew it was coming. I know that y'all had done a very intensive workup to prepare for this.
We did, and it's normally a 45-day cycle, and we were, as I mentioned, doing all the workup. We had some new equipment we were taking, the CH-53 Echo, the heavy lift helicopter. It was the first time it was deployed with us, and as well as a new 155 howitzer, the M198. That you needed the 53 to lift,
right?
And heavy equipment. So this was the first time they were deployed. So there were a lot of tests and so on, particularly for on and off the ship and getting them in place and so on. And but the normal routine of the workup and so on. And then, as I mentioned earlier, in the middle of it, in April 18th, this was just think 2 weeks before we sailed.
Right.
The embassy was destroyed. So that put a whole different flavor on the peacekeeping and what was happening over there.
Well, the term peacekeeper, you know, connotates so much. You know, peacekeepers and with your rules of engagement and in fact your orders was to try to, you know, to get between the warring factions or at least calm down the warring factions when you were there.
That's correct. Peacekeepers, peacekeeping missions are very dangerous. That was part of the problem is that you're really hanging out there because you're among the population. Now, people don't understand that when you put it in the context of Iraq or Afghanistan, you have green zones, you have secure areas, you have a war, you're expecting attacks and all this and that. Well, you're in peacekeeping and so on, you are providing a stable environment so the negotiators and the diplomats can find resolution, you know, through that and find security for them. But it was later is that when it started to, the security started really deteriorated, that I started screaming a little louder because of our vulnerability is our locations. All of our locations of the multinational force, the British, the French, and the Italians also.
Well, the French were hit at the same time you all were.
That's correct.
And one of the aspects of the book that I didn't understand that, you know, that you made really clear was the Israeli defense forces and how they interacted in Lebanon there, which of course, you know, their entrance into Lebanon and the battles there, which was one of the reasons for having the peacekeeping forces come in.
That's right.
Where they weren't as cooperative as they could have been.
No, they weren't. We had generally, you know, before Lebanon, very good relations with. We went to school with the Israeli officers and all this, and had a good exchange of warrior cultures and so on, and a lot of respect. One of the problems is that they were starting to take heavy casualties.
Right.
And one of the problems that we had with them was primarily lower level troops that were doing things, and it just didn't make sense. But a lot of that was frustration because of the taking casualties and the situation was on.
Okay. Then for that one is like you were talking about, like coming back through checkpoints and such.
Yeah.
You know, just it was a low level, but it still didn't make things too safe right then.
Didn't make sense, but it was again lower level and I think just frustration on a lot of the Israelis, and they were getting ready to pull back.
Okay, we're going to have to take a quick break here, and we come back. We're going to talk about being in Lebanon and your, you know, specific missions that you were doing there. And you did a lot of you know, shaky howdy, you know, greeting people.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, they're from the different multinational forces, but then delegation after delegation rolling in and how that affected what was going on too. This is Carl Lindebaugh, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio.
You're listening to KCNR 1460. This is Carl and Linda Bott here. Free Fire Radio. It's going to be high today of 93. Weather's always brought to you by Ensalmo Vineyards. By the way, tonight, head on up to Ensalmo's. We're going to be there doing music from 6 to 9. Don't want to miss out on a phenomenal place if you've not been there. It is in Inwood. It's just a short distance from Reading. And, you know, go online. Check out our website, KCNR1460.com. You will see the music series. You'll read about Ensalmo's. And if you've not been there, the food is just really incredible. It's to die for, and we love it. So come and join us.
If you want to see me dance, this may be one of the few times that you'll be able to see that.
Really?
Maybe. Our guest is Colonel Tim Garrity, United States Marine Corps retired. Has written a book, Peacekeepers at War, Beirut, 1983. The Marine commander tells his story, one of the largest losses of life in that attack since D-Day at Iwo Jima, I believe. We want being there kind of also puts you being in Beirut during this time frame also made you kind of the focal point for congressional delegations, reporters, you name it, they rolled through there. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, it was a never-ending parade of the visitors, because when you look back on that period, it was some of the hottest times in the Cold War. And this was really the main show in town. You know, you actually had confrontation. And what added to that is different events, before the Israelis pullback, you had events that made the war hotter. One was the 3 days before the Israelis withdrew, the Soviets shot down that Korean airline 007 over their territory, the civilian airline. When the Israelis invaded Lebanon to start with, through a series of brilliant tactical moves with their armor and in the air, decimated Syrian forces and so on, that caused the Soviets to have to retool and re-equip them to a tune of $2 billion. And that wasn't soon forgotten. We had Soviet advisors in the Baqa Valley in Lebanon manning surface air missile sites. So it was heating up at the same time this nice peacekeeping mission, unquote, was going on. But there was blood in their eyes for a payback.
Well, because the Israelis had come in there and, just like you said, had literally cleared out the Baqa Valley. They took out all their anti-aircraft. They got into a tank battle and they destroyed, all their tanks with no losses on the Israeli side and cleared the air.
That's right.
The same way. And then their type of warfare that the Israelis were using, too, was, reconnaissance by fire, putting fire into places instead of checking it out first. Somebody shot, they reacted with heavy firepower.
That's right.
So this was a, this didn't help endear anybody to the Lebanese and the people fighting.
And that just to add to that, it ties in with one of the lesson learned that I put in my book is we should really think hard before ever putting U.S. forces in any peacekeeping mission, particularly in the Middle East, simply because of our close relationship with Israel, who I have a lot of respect and empathy for, because, that's the only democracy. They've got it coming at them all the time.
Yes.
And we forget that, and all you have to do is fast forward to this rumbling we have today on our border with Mexico and all the help. Well, the Israelis live with that for their whole existence.
Now, when the congressional delegations came through and the senior officers all came through, the representatives from DOD, from SecDef came mm-hmm. through, what was their comments usually? Were they just like, oh, did they have any idea what was going on there?
Well, we gave them pretty in-depth briefs, and many times on the building, the BLT building that eventually was the target and destroyed, there was a lot of interest, and the reports that we received and sent back, and it's a matter of record, they were most impressed with the conduct of the peacekeeping force. And there was, particularly after the September war, when there was a ceasefire, there was an air of optimism that they could go on and find some kind of resolution. And a key event there that was part of that ceasefire was that all the factions had agreed to meet in Geneva with the government of Lebanon to work on the resolution. And that point that was part of negotiations that Syria agreed to, that particular point on the negotiations was something that they were not going to allow to happen. And they had to hit us. this is in retrospect now, but looking at it at the time, the same day as the ceasefire, we had an NSA intercept from the intelligence agency in Tehran to their ambassador in Damascus to take spectacular action against the Marines of BIA at Beirut International Airport.
So, and that was the day they had signed the peace treaty.
That's the day they signed the peace treaty, but they had to hit us within a month before the Geneva talk because they weren't going to take the chance. We got hit 28 days later.
So it was all planned from the very beginning.
You got it.
So we're going to take a break for the news, but one of the things when we come back, we're going to talk about the Israeli pullback from the heights, which then led to the attack itself. Our guest today is Colonel Tim Garrity. He's going to be with us at Tobacco and Brew at noontime today. We're going to be doing. He'll be sitting there. He'll be out there to meet you, answer your questions. We'll take it out over the internet, and also be able to sign books. We'll have books there too.
Peacekeepers at War, a phenomenal book, and looking forward to that time. This is Carlin Lindabot. We are going to take a break again for Fox News. This is KCNR Shasta Redding.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's 8:05 in the morning. It's Carlin Lindabot. Our phone lines here are 605-4567, and we're streaming at KCNR1460.com. Right, Linda. At Linda at KCNR1460.com.
This portion of the show is brought to you by BNT Satellite. If you're looking for somebody to come in and do a wonderful service on your satellite, your dish, please do go to BNT Satellite off of Airport Road.
Home theaters, he'll put it together for you.
244-1988.
82nd Airborne Veteran. Go down and visit him.
The book, Peacekeepers at War.
Beirut, 1983. Our guest is Colonel Tim Garrity, United States Marine Corps, retired. And Colonel, okay, we talked about the lead up to this. The Israelis now have just pulled out of the heights. We've already know, in hindsight, that the word was put out to go after the Marines in a spectacular version by the Syrians. What happens when the Israelis pull out of the heights without warning?
It created a vacuum that really kicked a predictable war over those. There had to be a transition of occupying those vacated strategic sites because they were so overlooking Beirut. And when there wasn't, when that didn't occur, for whatever reason, is that kicked off what became known as the September Mountain War, where you had the Druze and Muslim factions, militias, fighting the Lebanese Christians and the Lebanese armed forces for those strategic sites. Brutal fighting. Some of the most intense exchanges of artillery. We were resupplying the Lebanese armed forces twice during that period. And it became all of a sudden the focal point of the battle for the strategic sites at one particular one called Sukhogarb, a mountain resort. And it was there that I was given the presidential authority on the September 10th to provide direct support, naval gunfire or airstrikes, if I felt the it was the Lebanese forces, 8th Brigade at Sukhogarb, was in danger of being defeated, and that the attackers were non-Lebanese, which they were, and that the government of Lebanon requested assistance. And I was very reluctant to go down that road because you're changing. The orders were contradictory because you can't be impartial and neutral in carrying out a peacekeeping mission at the time of taking sides and providing direct support to one side.
And from what I understand from the book, you were getting a lot of pressure from the embassy and from other people to start to join this fight. And you were saying, hey, look, we've already had Marines killed and wounded during this time frame just as a peacekeepers. Once we go down this road, just like you said, once we start this, we're opening up a brand new game here.
And a key point of that, and my greatest anxiety, was the vulnerability of our position, our location. We were in a static location in a on the plains in the middle of an active international airport for over a year. Now, Carl, you were a Marine. You know that flies in the face of anything you learn the first day in boot camp.
That's correct.
You attack. Let the other guy worry about his positions. You keep him off balance. But it was a whole different set of circumstances here, and where these locations were acceptable at the time they were made during the negotiations and all that, it was the deterioration of security, particularly after the September war, that made us particularly vulnerable. I never was comfortable in those locations from day one I arrived.
Well, in your book, you can see that from the very beginning, and plus the sit reps you were sending back up. You were saying, you know, things are changing around here, and if once we take this next step, we need to change everything.
Yeah.
And that really was not done, though.
And you know, we were receiving up at the Battle of Sukhogarb, and even before then, I had the a radio battalion detachment, and we were doing intercepts of a lot of Syrian tactical communications and others. And interesting, increasing a lot of Farsi communications, which means the Iranian Revolutionary Guard that came in while we were there at the end of 82 and established a base there in Bekaa Valley, which is still very active today. They were involved in both sniper fire and contacts over our wire at BIA, as well as part of the battle for Sukhogarb.
We're going to have to take a quick break here. Our guest is Colonel Tim Garrity. We're talking about the lead up to that, to the final moment when the barracks themselves, the barracks at the BIA, the airport, were attacked. We want to talk about the aftermath of the of that. What happened, and then as we start to close out the show, talk about what you've seen going on since then, and what happens when we don't retaliate for an act of terrorism like this. Carl and Linda Bott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, clearly News Talk Radio.
You've seen it.
Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio at KCNR 1460. It's 8:15 in the morning. Carl Lindebaugh, our phone lines here are 605-4567.
Saturday is going to be 101. Can you believe that?
101.
So if you're going to do any gardening, get up early and do it.
For those
of you 70 degrees right now.
You know, and for those of you who are going on that far side run, we're leaving right after Dave and Ernie. Sell it with Dave and Ernie. We're going to take off and run for the mountain.
What is the Far Side Run about? Tell us.
Well, they're raising money for a wall that is a memorial wall to those who have fallen in the line of duty up in Mount Shasta, up in that county, for their veterans of wars and also the police. It's a good run, and it's always a lot of fun up there to go around and see the backside there of Mount Shasta instead of the one that all the tourists see. So you go out there with 300 or 400 of your your favorite friends and drive around. Our guest is Colonel Tim Garrity. He wrote Peacekeepers at War, Beirut, 1983. There's so much more, though, to Colonel Garrity than that. The barracks were hit, of course, on October 23rd, and it changed everything. It may have changed everything, including up to now and in the future, with that attack.
It was unprecedented, and right after the explosion, my headquarters was 100 yards from the target building, and we got blown ass over tea kettle, as we say, and the windows blown out and everything, and running down, and I couldn't hear, my ears were ringing, and I went outside to find out what happened, and I was just engulfed in this heavy fog, ash, gray ash, and staggering around, and a lot of the chaos and confusion that comes for events like this, which is all programmed by the terrorists. That's why it's so popular and still being used.
Yes.
Humiliation and hate are usually constant companions. And that's what they're doing. But anyhow, staggering around and then trying to find out what it was, and then the fog lifted and saw that the BLT building had been literally leveled, a four-story, very strong building.
And if you haven't seen a photo, there's a photo of this in the book. I mean, it's gone. There's a hole in the ground.
Which, by the way, again, if you're just tuning in, the Colonel will be there today at Tobacco and Brew at noon, and you can buy a copy of the book and meet the Colonel, and we're going to probably have excerpts, perhaps, or we'll read, whatever you do at a book signing, will be there regarding the book this afternoon.
It will. The main thing from my standpoint is after it lifted and so on is a Marine came up to me and said, sir, I said, it gave me a rundown that the a truck had penetrated our perimeter from the south from the direction of the main terminal and just go over concertina wire and so on. That was really primarily to keep civilian traffic out and threw out and then into the building and detonated its load. But, you know, I heard that, and then just a short time later, another one came up and said the French were hit with a similar one. So, you know, my mind was just racing. Is just what is coming down here? I said, you know, what about the British? What about the Italians? They've been hit, and so on. But it was just instinctive, you know, you start rattling through that, the like, and we're going to get hit again. This is a synchronized major attack, massive casualties. We're going to get hit again. So that's when I started all the movements to do it. But it was the aftermath of that stated. And by virtue of the fact our timidity in not responding to that, because this was pure terrorism. Everyone knew it, and we knew who did it. And we never reacted to that.
And it was virtually just within a couple of days of this that we got involved in Grenada. I believe. So that was an interesting concept.
That was actually set up. That was set up before the bombing, though.
Right.
That was teared because the Cubans had moved in and they decided they're going to hit. And ironically, the unit that was coming to relieve us, Marine Mao, participated in that en route. So they were a little late arriving.
The something like this just doesn't take place by accident. There's planners, logisticians, and such. And we're still running into those people, I believe, the ones that planned this this terrorist act.
Two of them, commander of the Revolutionary Guard Lebanon contingent that was involved in the attack, key operative and so on, became the Minister of Defense in 2004. And he was relieved last August.
Minister of Defense in Iran.
Al-Iran,
right.
And his successor, Vahidi, Ahmad Vahidi, General Vahidi, he was his deputy and later succeeded him of the Lebanon contingent. And then Vahidi was brought back and the mullahs promoted him and he founded, put together the Quds force. That's their elite special ops abroad force. And that was in 91, and then they hit the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires and the Israeli-Argentine Mutual Association building that killed 85 people. He's the one that's on Interpol's red notice list. He is today the Minister of Defense of Iran, and with Nadir as his buddy. Those are the two guys that are really orchestrating this whole program to get nuclear weapons. And if you walk that cat back, what they said they were going to do, what they were doing, and all this, is that they're on the brink and they're going to get it. And all this delay in these games and the shucking and jiving, the centrifuges are spinning, and they're getting more. And now we know North Korea is doing that, and just as a little reminder, today is the 60th anniversary, the invasion of Korea.
Right, by the North Korean.
1950,
right.
here in the middle of...
Right in the middle of something else. We've got to take a quick break here. Our guest is Colonel Tim Garrity. We're talking about not just what happened in Beirut, but the aftermath of that attack in 1983, and how it's continuing, and what we've seen since then. We're going to address what happened that day a little bit more. But then we're going to start connecting dots about where we're heading right now. Carl on the Bot, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio. Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott. Phone lines here are 605-4567.
You know what? We're kind of, we're just amazed at the information that's being passed this morning, and we are encouraging your emails if you have questions for the Colonel during the conversation that you're hearing. Also, if you'd like to meet the Colonel in person today out at Tobacco and Brew, you can meet the Colonel, and he'll be signing his book, Peacekeepers at War. We hope to see you there at Tobacco and Brew. Lunch will be $5 and park in the rear, and if you want to get there early, because there's probably, what, about 60, 70 can fit at the most.
We can put in there, but, you know, we can rotate people through, too.
By the way, it's going to be high today of 93. It's currently 70 degrees if you're just tuning in. We'll be here till 9 o'clock. This is Carl and Linda Bott here on Free Fire Radio. You can email me, Linda at KCNR1460.com.
Colonel, okay, the explosion that hit the barracks that day, I believe you said it was the largest explosion of its kind. I mean,
that's correct.
Ever,
and it still is. It's the largest recorded. That forensics and so on, with all the studies being made with Sandia National Lab and the FBI, CIA, Department of Defense, came up with in excess of 22,000 pounds equivalent TNT. And what, again, going back to the location where we were, the truck did not even have to penetrate our perimeter to cause massive casualties. It was just that size. And we've walked many scenarios through this, and if they had delayed that just a couple of hours, where it was Sunday and we were serving brunch and so on, the main mess facility, the only one we had ashore, was at the BLT building outside. So that brought in all of the Marines from the perimeter and so on, as well as others, that if they had waited and so on, the casualties would have been heavier.
I remember the day that explosion happened. I was in Okinawa, and I had the duty. And I was called in back into the communications room. At first, it was an explosion at the headquarters. That's what went out first. And I didn't, as you just said, I didn't picture all of our people being in one building. Mm-hmm. And they said there was heavy casualties. And I thought, oh, okay, maybe it was a rocket barrage, as you wrote in there. And then it wasn't until the next two or three messages came flowing through that headquarters had been hit, and now we were talking severe casualties. And I still was trying to figure that one out. And but, you know, of course, the magnitude of that and the location where you all had been forced to go in there, because that's the way you kept casualties from occurring. You had to put them in a hardened area.
The magnitude of the bomb preordained the results. You were going to get massive casualties, which is exactly was their mission, which essentially guaranteed massive casualties for both French and U.S. forces. And the Italians and the Brits were just as, if not more, vulnerable. But they selected us because of who we were.
Absolutely. Not especially what you were doing, but who you were.
And earlier at the break, you equated it to Pearl Harbor.
Well, it is, because there were seminal events in the War of Terror as we look back. And we've been at the same war, and these were the first shots, because it was really the first time the Islamists had attacked significant American targets. And that what came out of that and afterward and all this that became routine. And Al-Qaeda has picked it up primarily through Iran and Mukdia. How they picked up that expertise, pardon the word, and Al-Qaeda used it on the simultaneous truck bombings at the two U.S. embassies in 1998. And they expanded that same Beirut model when the four commercial airliners were hijacked here in 9/11.
Well, these 19 people with box cutters.
That's right.
I think is
And, you know, a point on that, Carl, is the bravado of this crowd on not only carrying out the tax, but they didn't even bother to have a backup plan. That shows you, you know, the chutzpah.
They had that, you know, that much confidence in it.
And they were right.
There was no direct retaliation after Beirut that I could, could find.
No, and it wasn't the president. He ordered it, and it got bogged down in the bureaucracy and so on, and primarily Secretary Weinberger cut it off.
I think that's an important part in the book, where it was going to be a retaliatory raid with the French, in fact, and Weinberger nixed it for some reason.
2 months ago, I was invited to address the National Security Fellows at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. And afterward, there was a large roundtable discussion, and it was hosted by the emeritus of the Hoover Institution, former Secretary of State George Shultz, who used to visit us in Beirut at that time. He's 86, still going strong and so on, but exactly that point. He thought there should have been retaliation.
I think people respect strength like that. We've got to take a break here. We've got a hard break for our news. Carl and Linda Bott here on KCNR 1460 Free Fire Radio. Our guest is Colonel Tim Garrity. Join us after these messages.
1460 AM, clearly News Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott. Our phone line's here, 605-4567.
Currently 70 degrees out. It's going to be high today of 93. Oh, yeah, 101 this weekend. So the weather's always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. Again, we want to let you know that we'll be out there tonight with music from 6 to 9 with Lou White and Rick Hill and John Gonsalves, and do a bunch of, going to be doing some really wonderful jazz standards. And so come out and join us at Anselmo Vineyards.
Yeah, and this portion of the show brought to you by Cypress Square Barbershop. Cypress Square is on Athens Avenue, man's last stronghold. No pedicures, no manicures, just haircuts, and you won't find styling gel. Yeah, you know what? You know what? You get good Marine haircuts in there, too, there, Colonel. So, and unless you're Rich Bay and you don't have a lot of hair. Okay. Our guest is Colonel Tim Garrity, Peacekeepers at War, and we're going beyond that now. But, you know, one of the things that we would be remiss in saying is that terrible event that happened in Beirut, 241 casualties, the impact on the wives, and how we can't go to war without the support of our spouses.
It's something to keep in mind today, as we're at wars, two wars, 7 years now, and when the Marines and soldiers and military goes to war, the families go with them. And they have a pretty good infrastructure to help and support one another, but the events after Beirut was so astounding. I mean, the largest casualties of the Marines since D-Day on Iwo Jima in 45 were so unexpected. Peacekeeping has a nice ring to it. How could something like this happen? And I was radioactive in a lot of circles when I came back and testifying on the Hill and all this. A lot of distance, which is interesting and so on. And of course,
friends that didn't call and things like that.
That's
I imagine.
Right. Yeah, that's right. The silence was deafening. But a lot of it was they knew that what was coming and so on. But the point of it is, with the more recent history and so on, that's become routine. The tactic and the war that we're in is and casualties in a war, not peacekeeping, is that this is not uncommon. This is why they're doing it.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, you know, on everybody's lips, because it's just currently happened, is the McChrystal, if you want to call it, scandal. What's your take on that?
I've been on the road and haven't gotten a lot of details, but what I did read and understand is a Rolling Stone reporter embedded or traveling with them at that would send up a red flag, let me put it that way, to some. And I don't know the details, so I can't criticize, you know, why and who this individual was and all this. General McChrystal had a very strong reputation, I know, has connected with the fighters, the warriors over there, because he's been there and lived it and been down with the special operations doing the up-close and personal work. And that connection and his relationships with the tribes and the others is going to be very hard to replace.
And the president of Afghanistan, Karzai, here are tight. The selection of Proteus is probably a good idea.
Simply because he was the boss above that for the whole region. Now he's got those connections on a broader scale, but primarily with Pakistan, which is the key ally in the Afghan war.
Well, what we're seeing though, as an aftermath of Beirut with the Iranians, nothing's changed, and in fact, it's spreading. As we've seen, countless attacks. People don't realize that we talk about 9/11, but this war has been going on since maybe you could even say when they took our embassy under Carter.
Absolutely, and in 79.
That
started it, and that again, an act of war. But if you look after Beirut, what happened in Beirut when Iran entered that war? When Iran entered Lebanon during the peacekeeping mission. That was the game changer. And that's when the embassy was blown. That's when the Marines, the magnitude of the bomb, forced us to change national policy and withdrew Western influence out of there. And it started this cascading events of all this terrorism worldwide. And you look at Iran, that still is operating out of Lebanon, and they're undercutting any kind of stability in Lebanon. They're undercutting any chance of Israeli-Palestinian peace accords. They are promoting and supporting Hamas, a Sunni, against Israel in the Gaza. They have Hezbollah, which is their proxy army, doing against Israel on the Lebanese border. And they're using it now in Latin America, in South. They're funneling, Hezbollah is funneling people as well as contraband with the drug cartels into the United States. Have been doing it for the last couple of years. It's expanding, and what Iran is on the cusp of getting a nuclear weapon that's going to change the whole complexion environment of the Middle East.
People don't realize is that the Saudis and many other countries on there are terrified of Iran.
You bet.
They're terrified of what Iran's going to do and what they can do. And these sanctions, which are non-existent, are ridiculous. And we've got to take a break. When we come back, there's a part of your book I want to read a little bit of, the part about how a member of a cell was here in the United States and how they could stay for so long. Mm-hmm. I'm just very briefly, and this will give you an idea of what the problems we're running into in our country because of the freedom and the liberties we have here and enjoy and give even to terrorists. Mm-hmm. Carl Endebot, Free Fire Radio, KCNR, 1460.
Hi. Good morning, Reading. Welcome to Free Fire Radio. Here in the last 15 minutes, it's going to be a beautiful and hot day today, 93.
Our guest is Colonel Tim Garrity, and wrote a great book, Peacekeepers at War. But one of the things I want to tell you about is that, that we talk about Hamas, and he's talking about how Hamas is infiltrating the United States and Hezbollah. Right, and Hezbollah utilizes cells to raise money, and we estimate there's 10 of these in the United States. But how they can do it is they caught one of them trying to come across the border. He bought a fake U.S. visa to get in. He was there for a year. He was allowed entry. A year later, the immigration judge rejected his plea and ordered him deported. He appealed, which permitted him to remain longer. A year later, while awaiting a verdict, he married an American, giving him legal standing to apply for permanent residency. They investigated and found both the marriage certificate and the American woman's birth certificate were fraudulent. So in August 1996, Hamoud was again ordered deported. He went underground, however, and in May 1997, he married a second American. As a backup, he took a third American wife in September of 97, even though she was already married. INS then mislaid its file on Hamoud's earlier marriage and granted him conditional residency in July 1998. 3 months later, he divorced his second American wife. Anyway, to make a long story short, and it is a long story, they went after him. They got Hamoud finally in 2000. About 250 law enforcement agents swooped down and arrested cell members. He had been trained by Hamas. He's been trained by Hezbollah and was here in our country, and we couldn't get him out because he kept getting married and walking away.
He was trained just right across from our wired BIA in the southern suburbs there in Beirut. And but when I put that in there, it gives you an idea of the confusion with the people coming into the country and INS and where it is, and just multiply that by 10. From 1980, this was 1990,
right?
Where they had it, and just that's 20 years ago, and the confusion we have in the border, the people pouring across. We know that the interesting thing that they have is OTMs that have been crossing the border. They call them other than Mexican,
right?
And how many
right.
are from Mideast countries and so on and all this. And here and cells and all this and that, it doesn't make it. And the other point I'd like to make is with Iran, is that when they the sanctions we have now, it's too late. These should have been years ago.
Right.
To have it, and it's trying to play catch up.
Yep.
And so I think with Iran getting a nuclear weapon.
Continue on. Okay, we've had, this is the emergency broadcast system that's kicking in on a test it does once a week. So let's just keep going here.
But the point is Iran getting a nuclear weapon in the Persian Gulf is going to change that whole complexion and have to start a nuclear arms race in the Middle East.
I don't know if people realize is that Israel was, after what happened in World War II, they've got a very long memory. As such as for as being destroyed as a people, mm-hmm. and that this they're never going to allow this. And unless you do something a little bit stronger than sanctions, I mean, what's the bottom line on this? If we don't do something, if the world doesn't do something, we could have a severe aftermath.
We're putting, frankly, the Israelis in an untenable position because they're talking about their very existence, and they cannot allow that.
Well, Colonel, you know, thank you so much for being here. There's just so much more we could do, but we're going to have you as our guest at noontime there at Tobacco and Brew. We have your book here, Peacekeepers at War, and I know we have a number of people that want to ask you questions out there, and we are so happy that you've come back again on our show, and you know, it's an honor having you on and being able to talk to you about what happened and what you see now and what the possible future is, unless we do something pretty strong here quick.
Well, thank you. I'm delighted to be here, and I look forward to seeing a lot of people there at the Tobacco and Brew.
Great. Okay, we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we've got a couple people on the phone. This is Carl and Linda Bott, KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio. Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio. Carl and Linda Bott, 8:54 in the morning. Phone lines here, 605-4567. Our guest was Colonel Tim Garrity from Peacekeepers at War, Beirut, 1983, the Marine Commander. He's going to be at Tobacco and Brew today at noon, and we're going to have books that you can buy, and then he can sign, and he'll answer your questions, and we'll have him there for an hour or so. Hey, our guest, Joe Adamson. Joe.
Good morning, Carl.
Hey, sorry to keep you waiting.
Hey, no worries. How are you doing?
Oh, we're doing fine. It was, you know, this gentleman, this warrior, lived through one of the most horrendous, horrific times that a combat commander could live through, trying to keep peace in a place where there is no peace.
Wow.
So, anyway, you, though, are calling with our health tips of the week.
I am. Are you feeling buff today?
I am. I'm feeling
excellent.
I'm
good.
Those 16-inch pythons I have.
Yeah. I wanted to give your listeners three reasons why everyone should muscle up. And the first one is, if you don't use it, you lose it. And lost muscle is lost ability to do the stuff that you want to do. And in middle age and beyond, we lose muscle at a pretty alarming rate. I believe it's about a pound a year is what they've calculated. So you really got to be working on trying to increase that muscle mass. The second reason is to turn your body into a better butter burner. And that's a term that
better
a
butter burner.
Better butter burner. Yes.
Is that like keeping a stick of butter between your thighs and something and running or something? What?
Well, burning that stick of butter between your thighs actually. I didn't come up with that. That was Covert Bailey, an exercise physiologist years ago. That was his key term, being a better butter burner. And muscle is metabolically active tissue. So we need muscle to keep our metabolism up and help us to be better butter burners. And this is particularly important for those folks out there that are trying to lose weight, because as you lose weight, you're losing muscle, whether you like it or not, unless you're lifting weights or, you know, doing some type of strength training. And then it's been shown that you can actually maintain all your muscle while you lose all fat, if you're doing strength training, but not if you are not. So that's your second reason to muscle up. And the last one is because muscle looks good. If you want a healthy, you know, toned, defined body, then there is no better way to get it than to be pumping iron or pumping tubing or kettlebells or body weight, but some type of resistance training is going to do the best job of giving you that defined athletic look.
We like that defined athletic look. You know, we aspire.
Well, you know, one of the people working out at your gym the other day wanted to look at my six pack. Yeah, and I said, unfortunately, it's covered up by flesh, but it's there. We just have to get to it.
Well, I guess we'll work on that better butter burning.
Better right, butter burning.
All right, Joe, thanks. We always love to get your fitness tip of the week, and of course, we'll see you again next week with our wonderful trainer, Amy.
Great
thank
talking
you.
To you guys.
Have a great weekend.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, Joe.
Yeah. Well, we have so much to be grateful for. Again, you know, I'm getting in emails coming, talking about, you know, today's event and what happened last night. There was the Dancing with the Stars fundraiser out in Ensalmo's, and we're going to be doing music tonight out there. It's going to be a packed night, so make your reservations. Congratulations again, Carl. I know you look at me and say, stop it, and I just want to say that it was just a beautiful event. There was a resolution. Selected as Veteran of the Year through a District Assemblyman District 2, and you got to meet Colonel Cook, who you sat there and talked with the whole time about how many people you had in common, and then of course today Colonel Garrity, and I know myself, as many other people, we want to thank those men and women who have served our country. And their families who have been behind them as they have to go into places we can't talk about and do things that are to help our country become a safer place to be. And let's not forget that. Let's be mindful of that as we are also commemorating the 60th anniversary of the Korean War, which my father was in.
It is. And, you know, we never should forget our veterans, ever. And, you know, not all veterans fought. Not all veterans went to combat, but all veterans were willing to go to combat, that they were there if they'd been called. It was such an honor having Colonel Garrity here. He went on after the Marine Corps to a very successful life, part of the time working at the Central Intelligence Agency, others working in a support of government agencies through running a technical lab. It was a pleasure meeting his wife, Karen, also, who is, what a good match they are. You know, next week we've got a number of different things going on. You know, I'll remind you about July 1st. There's a big barbecue down at the Tobacco and Brew for all veterans. You know, PGR, Patriot Guard Riders, Missing in America Project, the Old Guard. They're all putting this thing on, and it's just to have a barbecue for veterans. If you haven't met these groups, you just come on down there. The thing is just sit down and share and talk. Tomorrow, of course, is that fundraiser for Todd Thompson out there. We've got Far Side Runs. We've got all of our shows tomorrow morning, too, of course, starting with the Sell with Ernie and Dave, and Kurt and Ron Largent will be on, Alana Burke, Nancy Sutton Pierce, Dr. Trudy Pratt. We got Psych Talk with Ryan Frost and Katie Cundy. And, of course, and Boomer Tech, Senior Solutions with Sharon. Then Around the House with Carl Hawkins.
Just a full day. Thanks for being with us this week, and thanks for being supportive. Like, again, all your emails and your phone calls and congratulatory things that you've said for Carl and for me. So thank you so much.
That's right. You know, we've had a great week. You know, next week gets even better. This is Carl Lindebottom, Free Fire Radio. Just remember, it's the good guys against the bad guys. Which are you?
You're listening to KCNR, Shasta Redding.